This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. 10 GOP presidential hopefuls battled it out at last night's debate in Boulder, Colorado, as Donald Trump starts to get some tough competition from Ben Carson in the polls. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton's been shoring up her frontrunner status since the first Democratic debate. Paul Ryan becomes the new Speaker of the House, taking over from John Boehner. We're still a little more than a year out from the election, but there's a lot to talk about in the world of politics with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Howard, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Hi, guys.
Hi. How you doing?
Let's get things rolling with a trivia question, Ken. What is that today?
Well, you mentioned that Paul Ryan is the new Speaker of the House. He succeeded John Boehner of the state of Ohio. Anyway, who was the last House Speaker to run for president? The last incumbent House Speaker to run for president.
Okay. Yep. If you think you know the answer to that, or you just want to give it your best shot, give us a call here, 513-419-7100. The first right answer is going to win a political junkie button. Howard looks confident that he knows the answer.
I'm feeling pretty good.
I didn't say anything. I didn't tell him anything about the answer this time.
That's okay.
Hey, Ken, what were your impressions of last night's GOP debate?
Well, I know there was something called a baseball game on the other channel.
Night. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know that I heard this that Pete Rose bet on the debate, I heard. I'm sorry. That's not a funny joke in Cincinnati, is it? No.
But he only bet for the candidate he favored.
Well, anyway, first of all, I was fascinated by all of it. And, you know, you talk about Donald Trump and the national poll and how Ben Carson is getting closer and moving into the lead in Iowa. But the thing that stood out to me the most was the lack of energy, the lack of anything from Jeb Bush. And I keep saying that. I think the reason I keep saying that is I guess I expected him from the beginning to somehow, you know, break out from the pack and be the voice of sanity and the voice of maybe I'm equating the sanity with the word establishment, and maybe I shouldn't do that, but I'm just saying that I thought he would be more effective, a better counterpuncher, give a better rationale for his candidacy. And once again, I think for the third straight debate, he failed to do that. And, you know, you talk about the $100 million he got in his super PAC and all the establishment backing he has. I don't see where he does it. He's still in single digits in every early state poll.
The only thing I saw him do was try to make fun of Marco Rubio for not showing up in the Senate.
And that was a big mistake. Why? Right. For the fact that he spends the first two debates getting attacked by Donald Trump and mercilessly and unable to respond to it, why go on the attack on Marco Rubio? I thought it was a big tactical
especially
mistake.
Especially on that issue, which is, it's interesting, but it's not fatal to Marco Rubio by any means.
The argument was that Marco Rubio doesn't show up for work anymore in his job in the Senate, and there's some truth to that. There is absolutely truth to that charge, but as Marco Rubio said, well, when Bob Graham, when Barack Obama, when John McCain, John Kerry, right. When you're a member of the Senate, you miss votes. I mean, I don't know if they miss as many as Rubio's been missing, but it just seemed like the wrong argument. Yeah. The wrong tack for Bush.
It seemed like
take.
A waste of his time.
Well, I thought so.
You know, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, that comment that we heard from Jeb Bush about, I've got better things to do with my time. It almost seems like he's starting to reflect that in what he's doing on stage in these debates.
Didn't he sound an awful like, I'm serious here, didn't he sound an awful like John Boehner when John Boehner said, look, I don't need this job anymore. This is just so frustrating. I'm getting hammered by the people I thought who would like me. And what's the point of it? Is it worth all this aggravation? Right. Boehner said no. It sure sounded like Bush is getting close to saying no, although I'm not saying he's about to pull out of the race. But, boy, his numbers are not impressive at all.
I don't know. I mean, you're right. It did sound that way. And it came right after they had this sort of Bush summit where, you know, the whole gang got together and, you know, to try to bail out Jeb's campaign. And
I don't think they, I also don't think they know how to use George W. Bush, and I'm not sure what the answer is too, because there's some in the party who love George W. Bush,
right?
But I kind of think that, you know, he left the presidency under with very, very low approval numbers and a lot of strikes against him. The war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, the response to Katrina, the rising gas prices, the rising food prices, the collapse of the economy, certainly of the Wall Street economy. So I mean, I don't know, you know, just like Al Gore didn't know how to use Bill Clinton, although Bill Clinton's numbers were higher at the end than certainly George W. Bush's were, but Jeb Bush just seems to be boxed into a corner.
But he still has the access to money, the Bush money.
Yeah, he does, and so did John Connolly, and so did Phil Graham, and they're I'm just saying, I don't know what money means. I don't know if money is the be-all and end-all.
Yeah. So, Ken, what do you think is spurring this, him going after Marco Rubio? Is he anticipating something that the rest of us don't know?
Oh. Well, there has been some talk in the last couple of weeks, at least for those who don't buy the argument that it's going to be either Trump or Carson, even though Trump and Carson are the only Republicans in double digits in all the polls around the country. But if you buy the argument that it's not going to be one of them, then who will it be?
Right,
and
right.
Rubio seems to have the ability or the possibility of merging that Tea Party and establishment wings together. And perhaps Jeb Bush knows that, one, he's being eclipsed by Rubio in the polls, and two, you know, he's going to, and this is from his own state, no less, and he was a mentor to Marco Rubio when Rubio was first coming up in the state legislature. So, but it just seems so out of character for Jeb Bush to go on the attack, and it looked like even in that, his heart wasn't in it.
And in a 10-candidate debate, I mean, to me, it's hard to say, okay, this guy won, this guy lost, but I thought actually Marco Rubio might have come out the best out of this whole lot last night.
I agree.
Just in his message. And, you know, they were all attacking the mainstream media, which is good in a Republican, when you're talking to a Republican audience. I thought Rubio had the best line of all, where he said the Democratic Party already has a super PAC that's called the mainstream media, which I thought was a great line.
I agree with you completely. You know, the Republicans by nature, and Newt Gingrich did this a lot 4 years ago, the Republicans by nature love to attack the mainstream media for unfair campaign coverage. They compared the kind of softball questions that the Democrats got in their debate to what they got last night. And I thought Ted Cruz very effectively said, well, wait a second. Mm-hmm. You know, the first question to Donald Trump, you're a comic book. The first question to Ben Carson, your numbers don't add up. The first question to John Kasich, why don't you attack some other Republicans?
Right.
I mean, he had a point, and
he did.
And I, you know, so it was very interesting to watch. I know a lot of people say, oh, they're the Republicans go attacking the media again, but there was some justification for it, I thought.
Well, there was some justification for it, and it works with the Republican base. A lot of the Republican base.
Yeah, do they run the risk of this backfiring though, Ken?
Well, how? With whom?
With whom?
Does this just make them look petulant?
I mean, you know.
But who loves the media anymore?
Right.
That's true.
I mean,
the Democrats aren't in love with the media either.
I mean, I read this somewhere, but aside from Cincinnati Edition, I think that the media is just, you know, has no credibility in this country.
We're it, Mark. We're the only island of
sanity.
Ken Rudin said so, and that's good enough for me. So, Ken, the question was, who was the last House Speaker to run for president? And we've got a few folks lined up to try to answer that question.
Okay.
And let's start with Anita in Walnut Hill. Anita, what do you think the answer is?
Is it James Polk?
Ken?
James Polk, I think, was Speaker. I think he was Speaker before he was elected president, but that he is certainly not the last.
Not the last one.
Okay. David in Pleasant Ridge, do you think you know the answer to the question?
I've got a guess. Did Newt Gingrich run in the primary?
Newt Gingrich absolutely ran in the primaries in 2012. Matter of fact, he won South Carolina, which was his big victory. But he was not Speaker of the House. He was the former Speaker of the House.
Okay. Philip in Union, Kentucky, what do you think the answer is?
I said it was Newt Gingrich also, but makes me want to double-think my guess. I was going to say Calhoun.
Calhoun, I don't know if he was Speaker of the House. He was certainly a senator from South Carolina. I don't know if Calhoun was Speaker of the House, but certainly much more recent than that.
Okay.
Certainly much more recent, yeah.
Okay, Tim in Fairmont, who do you think it was?
James Polk.
Well, James Polk was an earlier guess that he I think he was the first speaker elected president, but not the last one to run for president.
Okay, so far, no success on that one. Ken, throw the question out again, will you?
Who is the obviously with Paul Ryan becoming speaker as of elected today, who is the last Speaker of the House who ran for president?
And if you think you know the answer to that, or even if you just want to take a wild guess, please give us a call, 513-419-7100. If you get it right, that first correct answer, you're going to win a political junkie button. So again, 513-419-7100.
Yeah, and Paul Ryan went to his undergraduate college in Boehner's district of Miami University.
Oh.
And back in 1990, when Boehner was running for the first time, Paul Ryan was a campaign volunteer knocking on doors for John Boehner.
Oh, I did not. I did not know that.
That's a fact.
But you do know. You do know who John Boehner succeeded in the House.
Yeah.
Who's that?
I'm not that old.
Who's the guy who John Boehner succeeded in the House?
The one immediately prior to him?
Yeah.
That wasn't Lou.
Buzz
Lukin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, it was. The honorable
you were talking about the
In his congressional seat.
Congressional seat.
Okay, yeah.
The honorable Buzz Lukin. Right?
Yeah, I covered his criminal trial, yes.
I remember when Buzz Lukin was first elected to Congress in 1966. I know I'm boring everybody, but he was a true rising star in conservative ranks.
Oh, yes.
I believe in 68, he endorsed Ronald Reagan for president in 1968.
Right.
And Reagan, of course, wasn't elected until 80. He was a rising conservative star, ran for governor in 1970, lost, came back to Congress, and then quickly disgraced himself with sex scandals and a tremendous come down for once a rising star.
Yep.
So, Ken,
don't you love those political history lessons that you could only get from Cincinnati?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
There's another plug for us. Ken, give us a few other impressions of that debate last night.
Well, again, I thought that, as I said, I thought that I agree with Howard completely. I thought Marco Rubio was the star of the night. I thought Ted Cruz's response to the questions were very good. I also thought that the opposite ends of the spectrum, I mean, at least on the stage, I thought that John Kasich on the far left on the stage and Chris Christie on the far right did very well. I thought Kasich offered some sanity to the whole thing, especially when some people, some candidates are talking about, well, let's just deport 11 million people. Let's just do it because why not? Or let's just come up with a number for a budget. And even if it doesn't make sense, let's just throw it out there. You could see Kasich's face like, this is insanity. This is not reality. And so while I'm not sure how many Republicans agree with him, but I thought that clearly John Kasich was a voice of sanity on the stage last night. Chris Christie, too. Go ahead, Howard.
Oh, well, John Kasich tried out all those lines at a kind of a going away party, the day before in Ohio. And as soon as I heard him, talk about those kind of things about, you want to get rid of Medicaid and Medicare. What are we going to do? How are you going to throw 10 million people out? You're just going to scream at them until they leave. I said, oh, boy, we're in for it. Tomorrow night, he's going to bust loose. And you talk about Chris Christie. I thought he was very effective, when this thing started drifting off into fantasy football. And
that was a very odd moment.
Yeah. Chris Christie said, what are we talking about here? We got $19 trillion debt. We got, ISIS and Al-Qaeda after us. Why are we talking about fantasy football?
And did you notice that Chris Christie looked directly at me during the whole debate?
It was looking at
me.
He did.
First of all, I had to get dressed immediately because I was very nervous sitting there. But but when he looked at me directly, my heart melted. I got all fluffy inside.
It has an effect on people.
It's that former prosecutor in him. It kind of makes you feel a little squeamish when he does that to you. Yeah. We will continue talking politics with Ken and Howard, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. And you can join the conversation 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken, some more people lined up to try that that trivia question, which was who was the last House Speaker to run for president? Do I have that right?
That's correct.
Okay. David in Silverton, what do you think the answer is?
I think it was John McCain. Wasn't he the one that suspended the campaign during the financial crisis in 2009? Was he the Speaker of the House then?
No, John McCain, since 1987, has been a senator from Arizona. He did serve in the House, but was never Speaker of the House.
Okay, let's see if Evan in Oxford knows the answer. Evan, who do you think it is?
I think it's LBJ.
LBJ also was in the House, but never served as Speaker. He was served in the House for a bunch of years and was elected to the Senate in 1948. Never was Speaker, though.
George and Mason, what do you think the answer is?
I believe it's William Taft.
Well, that's interesting because William Taft never served in the House or Senate. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I don't think he served in any office. Elective office before he was elected president in 1908, I'm sorry. William Howard Taft never served in any elective office.
David in Indiana, do you think you know the right answer here? Hello, David. Okay, David's fallen off the line there. Let's try Joe in Lebanon. Joe, what do you think the answer is?
I think it was Sam Rayburn.
Sam Rayburn served as Speaker of the House longer than anybody else in history, but he never ran for president.
Okay.
He was too powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's a step down. Right.
Right.
And let's see if Mike in Clifton knows the answer. Mike, who do you think it is?
Hello?
Yeah, Mike, you're
John
on. Who do you?
Garner.
Who?
John Nance Garner.
Ken?
John Nance Garner is the correct answer. Howard, did you get it?
I got it. I got it.
He did. He showed it to me earlier. So,
John Ant.
Very good, Mike.
Very good, Mike. Stay on the line there so that we can get your information, Mike, on where to send your prize to. And congratulations.
Let me just say, John Nance Garner was a congressman from Texas. He was Speaker of the House. Yep. In 1932, he ran for president, sought the Democratic nomination, but realized he was not going to stop Franklin D. Roosevelt. So he made a deal with him at the 32 convention, and he became FDR's running mate. And the ticket of Roosevelt and Garner were elected in 1932 and 1936. But briefly, Garner, Speaker of the House, was a candidate for president. That was the correct answer. Yeah,
they made a deal and they cut Al Smith out, basically.
And Ken, has to rank up there as one of the best trivia questions you've ever thrown out there.
And he described he wasn't very happy as vice president either.
No, he was very unhappy as vice president, as Lyndon Johnson was. And in 1940, when Roosevelt ran for a third term, Garner publicly broke with him and sought the nomination again. Yeah. But there was no stopping FDR. As a matter of fact, FDR was named after that great highway in New York, the FDR Drive, which I thought was pretty ironic. Yeah. And that's a very funny joke if you live in New York, of course. If you don't, it makes no sense.
Right. You sit there and you go, what?
Yeah, we're joking.
Yeah, exactly.
What are you talking about?
But they are laughing hysterically in New York right now.
They should be. We hope so. 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson as we talk politics today with the political junkie. 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, we were talking about Paul Ryan earlier. Ken, what kind of an impact do you think his being appointed as the House Speaker is going to have on the 2016 election, if any impact at all?
Well, you know, so the one thing the Republicans were very nervous about, I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen, how it's going to pan out, the battle for the presidential nomination. But the last thing the Republican Party wanted was a dysfunctional Republican majority in the House. And that means you have the 35 members of the Freedom Caucus either pushing for a government shutdown or making demands on the Speaker, as we saw with Boehner, as we saw with Kevin McCarthy in his brief time as seeking the speakership. leadership, but, you know, the demands they put on it. And of course, the argument is, look, if we can't show the American public that we can deal with our majority in the House, then how are we going to show the public that we can deal as with the presidency? So I think Ryan is a kind of a unifying figure. But having said that, once you become Speaker, you become the establishment, and there are some in the Freedom Caucus, you know, these very conservative Republicans, maybe numbering anywhere between 35 and 50, who are not going to be mollified by you know, just kind, nice words from a speaker. So you know, this the rivalry, the anger, the anguish, the hostility is still there. I just feel bad a little bit for Paul Ryan because, you know, having run for vice president, he was Romney's running mate in 2012. He probably, one, would rather have been just Ways and Means Committee chairman. And two, I think he was thinking about running for president one day himself. And
yes. You
just wonder if he's going to have to massage all these egos and battle with his fellow Republicans while he's speaker. That's not good training ground for running for president. Now, or maybe it is.
The majority of those people in the Freedom Caucus, were happy to support him for speaker. I mean, they seem satisfied.
Yes, but in yesterday's vote in the Republican conference, 35 right. Republicans voted against. Exactly 35. Yeah. Or maybe it was 43. I think it was 43 Republicans who voted against him for speaker. It was so. So again, you know, they may have supported him today, but they're still very wary, and they're still not going to take anything for granted.
So it sounds like you're kind of saying, in Paul Ryan's case, be careful what you wish for.
Well, he didn't wish for it. That's the problem. Yeah. He didn't wish for it. It was a true draft. It was a true pleading from Republicans who said, look, we have nobody else. I mean, we actually have nobody else who can possibly be in it. Newt Gingrich even talked about him being, you know, you don't have to be a member of the House to be Speaker of the House, which is kind of interesting. Very few people know that, which is true. But anyway, so Ryan,
people talk
about
Mitt
Ryan,
Romney, what, you know.
Right, Mitt Romney. I mean, I bet you we'd do the same for John Boehner. There are a lot of Republicans who say, I wish we had Mitt Romney running in 2016 because, I mean, that's ridiculous, of course. But, you know, you always wish that if only somebody for, you know, he would do a better job. It's almost like the same thing with Joe Biden. All those people said, if only Joe Biden would run, I mean, he would save the Democratic Party. We know that's not true either.
Yeah.
We will continue our political conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. Thanks to Kimberly Rorick for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and my guest this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's talk with Jonathan in Indian Hill. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
So why wasn't Newt Gingrich the correct answer?
He's contesting it here.
Because the question was, who was the last speaker? He's the former speaker. He was not the Speaker of the House. And when I described the question earlier, I said the incumbent, the sitting Speaker of the House, he's a former Speaker of the House. So if I asked you today, who was the Speaker of the House, you'd say Paul Ryan. So when I said, who was the last Speaker of the House to run for president, it wasn't Newt Gingrich because he was a former Speaker of the House. He wasn't even in Congress when he ran.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, Jonathan, thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Mark, can I add something else?
Right
before the break, you mentioned you want to thank Kimberly Rorick for listening to WVXU.
Right.
Is she the only one who listens? We need more listeners than just Kimberly Rorick. It's great that she's listening, but don't we need more people than that?
She represents this vast audience.
That's right. That's right. It's a contest, Ken.
Like to be able to name them all, but...
I got nervous because...
I think we've got quite a few more people who are listening, Ken, because we actually have quite a few phone calls lined up.
Yes,
so
we do.
Okay. They're all from Kimberly, though. That's what I'm nervous about. Okay.
No, actually, one of them is from Will in Western Hills. Hi, Will. Go right ahead.
Hi. You forgot to mention that Paul Ryan The big story that you're trying to avoid is that he wants time off to be with his family, for one story. And the other thing is you have Howard Wilkinson from The Enquirer, the conservative writer from The Enquirer.
Sorry, Will. No. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Howard, if you want to respond.
No, that's all right.
Could I just say one thing? I lost connection, so I missed his question. So
he was talking about some of the background information we've left out about Paul Ryan. You know, the fact that he wanted to spend more time with his family, and then he started off, you know, talking about Howard. So we said no.
Okay.
Let's talk with Doug and Anderson. Hi, Doug. Go right ahead.
Hi. My question involves, I didn't realize this until it came up in the news recently, about this fact that a non-member of the House of Representatives, so presumably a non-elected individual, can become Speaker of the House. So my question is, if the Speaker of the House is third in line in succession to the presidency, how in the world did our government ever make the rule that a non-member of the House could become Speaker of the House?
That is a great question. I don't know the answer to it. I just know that it's been said so many times that I take it for granted, but I don't know how that could possibly. That's a very good point. Speaker of the House after the president, if the vice president is next in line,
right.
And the thought of somebody not being a non-elected official. It would be pretty remarkable. But at the same time, I think after that is what Secretary of State, right? And he or she is not elected either. But you make a very good point that, look, it's never happened, but it could happen.
Well, I think it's President Pro Tem of the Senate.
Right. After Speaker of the House and the Senate, right. President Pro Tem of the Senate, which
then
means
Secretary
it's that means it's not it's, it's the longest serving member of the rule of the majority party in the Senate. That would be Orrin Hatch of Utah, because he was elected back in 1976. For the longest time, it was Robert Byrd, who was elected in 1066. So I mean, the thought of just, you know, having somebody been around just because he was around for so long to be next in line for the presidency is pretty remarkable.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk with Jonathan in Norwood. Hi, Jonathan. What's your question?
More of an observation. It just seems to me that Governor Kasich might be making a case to be an eventual vice presidential nominee. He's turned attack dog. He's got a heart kind of like the equivalent to a Republican Joe Biden. Just wanted to see what you all thought of that.
Okay, thanks.
I hear more talk about either a Rubio Kasich or a Kasich Rubio ticket than anybody else. First of all, I know that if Donald Trump got the nomination, his pick for vice president would be Donald Trump. I mean, there's no question about that. But assuming that it's not Trump or Carson, which is my assumption, although I don't know why, because there's no sign of weaknesses of these guys. But if it is, I kind of think that given the fact that we're also talking about the possibility of taking Ohio and Florida, some combination of Rubio and Kasich would be a very inviting ticket for the Republicans
to consider. That would be very potent, because Florida and Ohio obviously are two of the swing states. You know, you could throw Pennsylvania in there with that group, but that could be potentially a very, very strong ticket.
Now, in fairness to that point, I mean, aside from Lyndon Johnson in 1960, I can't think of a vice president really who really made a difference. You think of Lloyd Benson with Dukakis in '88, and he didn't take Texas. So, for the most part, and of course, I do know that with Dick Cheney as vice president, the Republicans swept Wyoming. So there is that. But no, for the most part, though, I don't think a vice president really matters. But I think in Ohio, it could. And you know, the last time Ohio went wrong, aside from 1960, was 1944, because their governor, John Bricker, was on the Republican ticket. So it can have a lot to do with carrying a state.
You know, we're talking about Joe Biden earlier. What do you think of Joe Biden's decision not to run?
Not a surprise at all. We kept arguing from the beginning that he didn't have the money. He didn't seem to have the heart in it. He was starting very, very late. Hillary Clinton and, to a lesser extent, Bernie Sanders are organized all over the country. If he wanted to do it, he would have had to do it much earlier. And I know that in the old days, the October before a presidential election was not too late. I mean, Bill Clinton himself didn't announce his candidacy until October of 91. But that's a long, long time ago. Now you have to really, you know, get in the game much earlier, raise money, raise an organization. And Biden's heart never just seemed to be in it. I'm just surprised he went on this long without announcing his decision.
It was interesting when he went out in the Rose Garden and started talking about it. It almost sounded like he was chiding Hillary a little bit, you know, when he started talking about we can't be looking at Republicans as our enemies. You know, they are our opponents. And, you know, that was, I mean, something that Hillary has talked about in the past, that, you know, the only enemies she has are Republicans.
Right. She said that at the first debate, October 13th.
Yeah, right.
And well, first of all, you knew that when Obama accompanied Biden out to the Rose Garden, you mm-hmm. knew he was not going to say, yes, I'm running. You knew it was a no. And that's why Obama was there. But you're absolutely right. I agree with you completely. When he said that I don't consider Republicans as my enemies, more, you know, adversaries, but certainly not enemies.
Right.
It seemed to be a slap at Hillary Clinton. But Biden insisted it wasn't the case.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. We did have someone from Twitter who wanted to know what the Hillary email investigation entails, and where is it going, if anywhere? I mean, we've been hearing so much about the Benghazi hearings lately that the email thing has been kind of in the background there, hasn't it?
You know, you think of all the things that have gone right for Hillary Clinton in the past couple of weeks, certainly the debate performance, certainly the Joe Biden decision, and certainly those 11 hours that the Republicans, to no effect, I thought, in the Benghazi. I mean, once again, I don't know what the purpose of it, but I think the email investigation is legitimate. I mean, yes, she turned over 55,000 emails, but she destroyed 30,000 emails, and the FBI is currently investigating. Now, ultimately, one, do I expect that the Obama FBI will come up with an indictment? Of course not. But it's there. She said it's a mistake. Even President Obama said this was a big mistake. But again, the FBI is investigating, and I don't know how long it lasts, but that's the extent of it.
Yeah, the investigation, I mean, you know, obviously it could be a very big problem for her. But, you know, I think that 11 hours of her before this committee, I think she came out looking a whole lot better than these Republican members of Congress did.
If you looked at her face during the Benghazi, I mean, it was just like it was more of a bemusement.
Right, yeah.
Like, look, she said, look, nobody anguished more over the death of these four Americans than I did. And whether the real question, you know, I mean, there are still legitimate questions like, were there cries for help? I don't mean literal cries for help, but with requests for help from the compound in Benghazi for security, and why wasn't it realized? But for the Republicans on the committee to spend most of the time on Sidney Blumenthal and things like that, I don't know if they had an opportunity, but they missed it certainly.
Yeah.
So I take it, you know, you hear the argument made that these House hearings on Benghazi are more about dropping her politically than they are about actually getting to the bottom of what happened.
Who was the first person who said that? Kevin McCarthy, the nominal favorite to succeed John Boehner. He said, look what we accomplished with the Benghazi committee. We got her numbers down. Why would a Republican say that?
Yeah.
Even if it was true.
Right.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation, and let's talk with John in Beaver Creek. Hi, John. What's your question?
Thank you. Hi, this is John. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, through all of the rhetoric and all of the discussions, I find it amusing or interesting that I hear little about the fact when we discuss taxes and revenue and all of that with the federal government, everybody's discussing their issues about their goals for taxes and how they're going to change things. Why is it that no one discusses the fact that the federal government's revenues as a percentage of gross domestic or gross national product are at its lowest level since our last peace year, which was defined as 1950? And that the federal government takes less and less money out of the economy than ever before, yet everyone thinks that they're harmed. I'll take my answer off
okay,
the
air. Okay. Interesting, because, you know, in last night's debate, we did hear a lot of talk about the government spending too much. We heard we need to cut taxes, but it seemed a little short on detail. And to his point, what do you think of that, Ken?
Well, if you buy the argument that the country's infrastructure is falling infrastructure with an R at the end is falling apart, then one would think that you need revenue to pay for this. And so, but if you mention taxes to a Republican audience, you immediately get Grover Norquist, the head of Club for Growth, you know, up and out and say that, look, this can't, you know, I don't think he's head of Club for Growth, but Grover Norquist makes these Republicans sign this pledge saying you will not raise taxes. And, you know, I mean, I can't imagine any Republican saying to an audience that we've got to raise your taxes to solve the ills of the country. The closest anyone came to it last night, I thought, was Kasich by saying that, you know, it's insane to just say no to these taxes because we have serious problems about health, about infrastructure, about just maintaining the country. And yet, of course, if you mention that in Iowa, you mentioned that in New Hampshire, which has no income tax, you mention that to Republican audiences around the country, you get booed off the stage. I was just thinking the other day of Walter Mondale at the 1984 convention, who basically said, "Elect me and I'll raise your taxes." I mean, that's not why he lost 49 states, but I mean, it's not a. Unfortunately, you can't. I mean, that's almost like the argument for
it didn't help
president.
Him any, though, did it?
No, but he told the honest truth. I mean, that was the truth at the time.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, something. I mean, maybe that's the argument for a one-term presidency. Of course, right. when you're a one-term president, I mean, if you're limited to one term, you're not accountable to the voters at all. So I'm not arguing for that at all. But I don't know how you could just say look, Reagan did it cleverly. I mean, he raised fees. He did some kind of finagling that actually taxes were raised after his tax cuts basically hurt the economy. So. I mean, there are ways of doing it. You just don't say that you're going to do it when you're president. I mean, that's what people don't like about politicians. They tell you one thing and they do another. But if you want to solve these ills, you got to pay for it. And how are you going to pay for it? By cutting Medicare? By you know, cutting education programs? That should not be the answer.
We will continue our conversation with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, along with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Edward from Westwood joins us. Hi, Edward. What's your question?
I have a comment. I've got my Constitution open in front of me.
Okay. You've gone straight to the source.
Yeah, the reason that the Speaker of the House can become president is that's a matter of statutory law. Article 2, Section 1 says that the Congress may by law provide for the case when both the president and the vice president are unable to serve. So that's just a statute. It can be changed any time.
Okay, Edward. I'm not sure we want to get into a constitutional debate, but Howard,
that's right. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Edward. We appreciate the phone call. 513-419-7100 if you would like to join our conversation.
We still need to come to an answer, and I'm going to look this up as soon as we get off the air. What about why could a non-member of the House become Speaker of the House?
That is a question.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to look that up because I don't know the answer to that.
I had never heard that before until you brought it up earlier, they could pick anybody.
It's an interesting question, yeah. But there's also the fact that you don't have to live in a congressional district in order to represent it.
True. You have to live in the state, but you don't
have to live in the state, but not in the district.
But you know something? I think that's a fair rule because a lot of times, as redistricting,
right.
we have the people of the opposite party trying to draw the incumbent outside of the district. And so that's kind of say, well, I'm not going to have to move every 2 years or every 10 years because you redraw the districts. But
It happened here. You know, when Ted Strickland was in the House, they redrew the district and he had to move and run and win again in a totally different district.
Although, as I recall, didn't Ted Strickland lose 3 times in a row?
Well, that was much earlier. Before he was finally elected to Congress.
Howard, is he the next senator from Ohio?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I think this is going to be a very close election. Portman is going to have so much money, more money than Ted Strickland. Ted Strickland was talking about raising $20 million. For this campaign. Right now, as of the end of September, he had $1.5 million in the bank. Portman's campaign had $11 million in the bank. They both have independent expenditures, you know, independent people coming in and spending on their behalf, super PACs and that sort of thing. But Portman trails in the polls right now, but not by a very large margin. I think it's going to be close, and a lot of it's going to have to do with if Hillary Clinton can actually win Ohio.
I don't know if I ever told you this, but do you know that no Republican has ever been elected president without winning? I guess I've told you that.
I am aware of that. We've heard this numerous times.
I just made that up now.
No, I have that in boilerplate for my column. Yes.
Ken, how many Republican debates are left at this point?
They've done three. The next, as a matter of fact, they're having the next one, which is November 10th. They're going to have the next Republican debate, which is the fourth debate in Milwaukee. Still, the second Democratic debate won't come until November 14th in Des Moines, and then the third won't come until the Saturday before Christmas. It's kind of remarkable. I mean, poor Martin O'Malley. I mean, not that Martin O'Malley really did a great job during the debate, but he really tried to make the argument that the only way we can see who should be the nominee is to have more and more debates. Well, you know, when you have one debate, you know, in October, one debate in November for the Democrats, and one in December, and then comes the votes in Iowa, New Hampshire. You know, it's not that debates are always a great thing, and not that it always tells you everything. But I think that those who want to see the candidates up close and personal, debates is the best opportunity, and you certainly have more of an opportunity with the Republicans than you do with the Democrats.
Now, pardon me if you go ahead.
But this field is going to have to narrow down considerably before they start really making sense.
Yeah, that was one of the things that made last night so difficult. I mean, you have 10 people up there, and they're all competing for time, and
I mean,
you really can't get an impression.
It can be chaotic.
Yeah, and I mean, to their wisdom, to their credit, voters it's usually voters who make the decision. And when Iowa comes on February 1st, and then of course New Hampshire on February 9th, I mean, I think candidates,
they will weed them out.
Yes, exactly right. I mean, so it is a huge field. I mean. And but I still suspect, though, that if you look at some of the reviews of the candidates, in the sub card mm-hmm. of the debates, the first one with Jindal, Pataki, Rick Santorum, and Lindsey Graham, there's no reason for them to drop out. They're not spending money. They're not raising money, but they're not spending money, and they get to be on the debate stage every time. But if the networks ultimately say, okay, no more sub. Junior debate, you know, first debate, then maybe one of those guys will drop out. But, you know, it's like a tree in the forest, so who knows? But you just wonder about the Rand Pauls and about the Mike Huckabees. And to be honest with you, you wonder about Jeb Bush, who, again, if you looked at the latest CBS poll, he's like anywhere between 6 and 9% in Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina.
Yeah.
No Republican has ever lost New Hampshire and Iowa and gone on to win the nomination. And right now, there are like 4 or 5 candidates between the front runner and Jeb Bush. It's a long hill to climb.
Yes.
What do you think of the national poll that came out that showed Ben Carson moving ahead of Donald Trump?
Isn't it remarkable? When Donald Trump was the clear front runner, everybody says, I like him because he's mean and he's evil and he's obnoxious and he's toxic. And now they say they like Ben Carson because he's not Donald Trump. He's,
right.
But look, the point is they like Trump and they like Carson because they're outsiders. Ostensibly, they're not beholden to the super PACs and the special interests and the problems of Washington. It was kind of interesting to see Jeb Bush, the ultimate establishment candidate, saying he has no ties to Washington, of course, other than his brother, his father, and his grandfather. But you know, I think right now voters like that. But again, we talk about these voters. Who are these voters? First of all, are the Trump and Carson supporters going to caucus in Iowa? A lot of these people are brand new to the political process. Many of them have never caucused before. I say this over and over again. I mean, look, Trump and Carson have shown durability far longer than I ever expected. But having said that, it's still October. It's still November. We still have 95 days to go. I mean, that's not a long time before Iowa. And we still have, you know, let's just see what happens in the next couple of debates. But this is so unexpected.
That's really a good point, because to be a caucus voter in Iowa, you really have to make a commitment. I mean, you have to get up, you got to go someplace, you know, could be pretty far away on a snowy night to some school, high school gymnasium. I mean, it's an effort. It's not just
walking. And spend hours. It's not like going to a voting booth and pulling a lever, right.
And walking out, you know, 2 minutes later. No, you're going to be there all night.
And on the Democratic side, Candy, it's been a pretty constant theme that since the first Democratic debate, and then the fact that she made it through the Benghazi hearings relatively unscathed, you keep hearing that Hillary is solidifying her hold. How is Bernie Sanders doing, though? I mean, he's not fallen off the map yet, as far as I know.
No, not at all. I mean, he's raising money. He's actually hired a pollster, which he vowed not to do, but he's hired a pollster. He's leading in New Hampshire. He's very competitive. Some polls have him ahead in Iowa, some have him behind, but he's certainly competitive in Iowa and leading in New Hampshire. But then what? I mean, then we go to constituencies that are African-American or are Latino. Right now, Hillary Clinton seems to be very strong with his constituencies. But we'll see. I mean, Hillary Clinton has moved her rhetoric and her positions to many of those that Bernie Sanders have long favored. And rather than being criticized for flip-flopping, she's being rewarded for coming to terms with the new realities of the Democratic Party. She seems to be doing everything right. I hate to say the word, anointed, but she's certainly the likely nominee at this point.
Yeah, I think, once this thing gets to states like Ohio, with large urban areas and lots of African American voters, and then it really solidifies for her. I think
a lot has to do with the FBI investigation, the emails.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so anything. Yeah. I mean, there are things that could happen, but right now, as of now, it's hard to see it. Yeah,
right. Yeah, that's the one thing that hangs out there that could tear it all down.
Well, Ken and Howard, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
I'd like to say today wouldn't be impossible without Kimberly Rorick. I mean, thank you. I want her. Yeah. I'm so thankful.
Absolutely.
She's listening.
We are grateful for all our listeners.
She should tell her friends to listen too, yeah.
Yeah, well, we're thankful for everybody who listens to 91.7 WVXU.
Absolutely.
Much appreciated.
Absolutely.
Political junkie Ken Rudin and also WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can find archives of our program at WVXU.org. Today's show was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Kevin Rowinski was the technical director. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. there are so many lending options out there advertised over the internet and billboards, you have to be careful not to fall into a debt trap. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll take a look at predatory lending and ways to avoid it. We'll also hear from the founder of the pop-up party series, Tinderbox, on his unique business model and the power of partying. That's Cincinnati Edition, Friday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.